the children as a command of God. It fits into his plan. It's why he picked Abraham. It was articulated in the law in Deuteronomy 6. It's repeated in the New Covenant in Ephesians 6. We've talked about the responsibility weighing on the parents' shoulders more than the church. I want you to grasp that deeply. Don't expect a church in their church program, Sunday school, or even youth group to make up for what you don't do. The Sunday school is a rather recent invention, if you will, starting from the latter part of the 1800s and then coming into our own. And you want to start as young as you can. So if you don't begin real young and you start from zero with your teenagers, you have a real uphill battle. I mean, you're trying to change a lot fast and the windows aren't nearly as open. Also made the point that it is harder to raise children in Sodom and Gomorrah than it is in the wilderness. And we'll have to make decisions about where we live in one sense, and also the subculture in which we live in another sense. What we're seeking to do in that way is to restrict what our children have to face, so that when they face it, they're ready for it, that it's not overwhelming. We talked a little bit, I just touched briefly on Christian education, and all of us will have to make our decisions about where we send our kids, public or otherwise. Generally speaking, children who are young may do a little evangelism. As they hit the older elementary and get into junior, senior high, it drops pretty close to zero. Be surprised. Your teenagers are developing their own identity apart from you at that time. They're feeling a bit insecure. They're looking for acceptance, not just from you, but from their peers as well. And most places, though not all, Christianity is O-U-T. Okay? Okay, the third major point we talked about was the importance of unity between husband and wife. Children pit one against the other. You see that especially in the divorce situations, because a child can go to one parent where the law is laid down and there's love, and then go to the other one where the other parent buys them anything they want and there are virtually no restrictions. All of you visualize and know what I'm talking about. Okay, those are realities, and it's really tough to raise children under that environment. It is very hard. I want to mention one other thing that I didn't at that point, is that when you have a godly spouse, you run relays on your children. What do you mean? That there are times when the spouse is better than you are. There are some days where kids will do something and you are so hacked off, so upset that you're not fit to do anything with them. Does anyone else identify with me? I've had a couple of times where I was so angry. I knew I wasn't fit to say anything. So I removed myself slightly from the situation and prayed for my wife. Then you say, well, all you needed to do was confess it, forsake it, and get back in there. Yeah, but that takes a little time to do that. And she was in good shape and I wasn't. You run relays. One of the things that we're going to have to gain in our culture is the sympathy for the single parent. They're trying to do it by themselves. Now, what does that mean? That means they go to work and they give the best juices of their day working in their occupation. And they're trying to work hard, and their economic plight is difficult. And they get home, they're tired. But then their kids get home, either before or at the same time as they do. And they're expected to shift gears. Now, they've got to cook, they've got to do the laundry, they've got homework to help the kids with, they've got lunches, perhaps, to prepare the next morning, clothes to lay out, and get ready to go. You say, well, when do they think about what they're going to do for devotions with their kids? That's the point. They don't have anyone to run relays with them. And when you have a godly husband and wife, and you understand that it's both of your objectives to raise godly children, then you spell one another. Just for sake of sheer energy, when one is shot, you go lay down, I'll take the kids for a while, I'll take them. I'll do the devotions tonight. You can do it tomorrow night. Okay? And you use the best that you have. When you're running it by yourself, it's really tiresome. Single people really need our help, or they're not going to make it. Any comments on that? So there, in essence, the church has to become their fathers, has to become their mothers for the sake of the others to have a reasonable opportunity to raise godly offspring as well. It's a major ministry area that needs to develop within churches today. We're not there. We haven't really figured out how to do that yet. Okay, the fourth point, and now we're picking up a little bit of new ground. What are we seeking to do as we're raising children through the teen years? What are they becoming? We want them to become adults. We want them to become people who are thinking themselves correctly before God, and who are choosing not because mom or dad said do it, but because it's their choice as well. So there's it's a dramatic transition time, and I want you to know that. That's why I asked you when we started out, how many of you had a good or not so good time during the teens. For most of us, it's rough. We mean that because it's easy to forget that you went through the same thing and somehow lived. Okay? Also, if you read through the book of Proverbs, you'll find that there are more than one way of discipline. The one that's very effective, and not certainly the only one that's very effective, but one of the prominent ones while they're young, is the rod. Train up a child when he's young. Okay? If you watch the use of the word rod, it's used quite a bit through the book of Proverbs. If you don't strike a child with the rod, says to the father, then you hate him. That's in Proverbs. That's a paraphrase of it, but it's a pretty decent paraphrase. On the other hand, if you watch, as children become older, they're moving in one way or another. They're becoming wise and sensitive to God, or they're becoming foolish. The starting point in there was their being, do you know what the word is in Proverbs? Simple. What's simple mean? It doesn't mean unintelligent. It doesn't mean they're lower on the SAT scores. What does it mean? It means gullible, morally gullible. It means they're open to doing things without really being able to see the consequences of what they're doing. Okay? The book of Proverbs puts virtually all youth in that category. And a lot of adults fit there as well. They keep tooling from one thing to another, oblivious of the consequences that are going to take place as they pursue that. Your goal is to move your child from being simple to being wise. You're moving from the rod to spiritual foresight and reason and consequences. For example, in the book of Proverbs, it talks about parents rescuing a angry child. It says, don't do it. If you do it, you will do it again and again and again. Many parents, in seeking to protect their children, don't let difficult things happen to them to let them learn. Okay? How do we help them overcome their gullibility? Well, we want them to see the end of an ungodly life. So rather than sheltering them, we'd like to have it fall on their experience, the results of that. That's one of the reasons you want to start young. If you started young, they already have this big repertoire of stories in the Bible. It doesn't Noah's Ark doesn't blow them away. They understand the judgment that comes on sin. Sodom and Gomorrah. Kids handle all of those very well. Some adults have problems with it, but the kids don't. Well, by and large, they handle that quite well. And they can see, yep, people did wrong. Yep, they deserve it. That should be something that's gone over and re-gone over for the times that they're young and you're able to sit down and read and share and discuss, because your windows are going to shrink. As they move to the teenage years, and come home and you say, well, how was it today? Awful. What happened? Oh, nothing. Oh, how'd it go today? Okay. What happened? Nothing. How'd it go today? Really well. What happened? Nothing. Oh. Yeah, it's... Sometimes you get them to talk a little bit, but the windows shrink. And you have to be there when the windows are there to talk. That's why I encourage one of the parents to be home when they get home. The window may be small, but it's still kind of there. And if you develop it, you can make use of it. Secondly, you need to help them see circumstances that are not very nice. Take them. Show them. I mentioned last night that my dad took me to visit a relative who had syphilis. I still remember that today. It's never forgotten.
How old were you?
8, 9. I don't think any, maybe even younger than that. Well, I do remember. Okay. He took me down to Cadillac Square, which is in Detroit. I grew up south of Detroit. Took me along Cadillac Square where you saw all the drunks. And you get propositioned for money and other things walking through the parks. Just like Central Park, only Central Park's a little bit more famous than Cadillac Square. Same thing, around Cadillac Square you have the bars and the striptease places. You could look in, see what the people are like. Of course, Dad couldn't take me in because that was against the law. But you could look in and say, do you know what the people do there? No, what do they do there? Okay. And if you read the book of Proverbs, that's where the book of Proverbs takes you. It takes you to the prostitute's house. It takes you to a situation where you watch the young individual who's simple. He's going to her house, you know. I looked out through my lattice, French windows. I saw him. He doesn't know. I mean, he's just completely oblivious. He doesn't know that the end is death. So you work with your kids and you try and expose them to the end of sin to help them see what youth is not want to see. It's not bad to have them take them to an AIDS wing of a hospital if you get a chance to do something like that. When you talk to them about their kids, their peers, did this with my oldest. She had a friend whose, you know, parents had broken up. And I could watch the way her life was going. My daughter couldn't at the time. And I said, I'll bet you within a couple years your friend's going to be pregnant. Oh, Dad, I don't think so. Guess what? Right on. Right on. How can you tell those kinds of things? You get to learn things by watching how things are going from the scriptures. And if you're perceptive, you can pretty much call them in advance. Then she saw the product of this gal's lifestyle. She stayed her friend, but she never took on her friend's lifestyle. Because she didn't want to be in that situation. Okay? So you don't spare them from seeing the end. As a matter of fact, you want to have them see the end. When children are real young, you use synthetic consequences to help them learn, i.e., rather than sticking a barrette in the electrical outlet, you spank them. Okay? The spanking isn't the same thing as electricity. Well, you're teaching them that the wages of sin is death. And they learn from that. When they get older, it's not nearly as obvious to them. They're trying to understand the nature of things in and of themselves. And so you're trying to help them to see the end from the beginning. Next point on that, you're also trying to limit the counter-teaching. You're trying to limit the counter-teaching, the teaching that you can be involved with all of these kinds of things and have no consequences. At the beginning of sexual revolution that we've gone through in the United States of America, there was an individual who challenged all the consequences to illicit sex. The pill had just come on the market. And of the objection that promiscuousness had problems, he made the comment, there were no consequences. People piled into it headlong. By the 70s, there were consequences. By the 80s, there were more consequences. In 1982, it registered on us that we had a herpes epidemic. Do you remember that? The New Scarlet Letter? That's 8 years ago. Now, a generation has almost completely forgot that that exists, except if they happen to have herpes, which a good number of them do. There's a whole other slug of them that have chlamydia, and there are some that have AIDS. And AIDS is really traumatic. You want to limit the teaching to the contrary. Where do they get the teaching to the contrary? From the electronic babysitter, otherwise known as the television.
Yeah, it all turns out nasty.
Yeah, and they're the beautiful people. They're rich, they have lots of money. I don't know how they make it, but they are rich, they have lots of money, they don't have pimples. Ever notice that? Their complexion is flawless. Their clothes are... It keeps you moving with suspense and sex and intrigue from one thing to another. Okay? By the time a young person reaches the age of 30, how many hours have they sat in front of the electronic teacher? It's the average time a kid watches TV per day. Yeah, seven is, it's a lot.
But if they watch a couple hours of cartoons in the morning and watch it all afternoon, sure. They go to bed, it's 4 or 5 hours after school.
Okay, if they watched it 4 hours a day, that's how many hours per year?
$1,300-$1,400
per year. If they watch that tube from, say, the age of 8 to 18, they have watched... How many? 15,000 hours. 15,000 hours. All of it, pretty much all of it, teaching not fidelity in relationships, teaching non-consequences from immoral behavior, and it's pictured. It's something that your mind takes in as part of its experience. It logs it in the background. Even though you say it didn't happen, you saw it happen. Does that make sense?
It's like you're living with those people. It's not like you're just listening to something. It's
yeah.
Like you're living right with those.
That's
people.
Right.
It's
only
your experience too.
Yeah, only it's apocopated. It's cut off. You watch 30 minutes at a shot. It's not like living with people next door. You know, you have your soap operas going next door, except they're not nearly as pretty as the one on the tube. One, they do have zits. Two, you hear the yelling. We had some neighbors that moved in next to us, lived in a duplex, and behind my wood pile, I was with one of my daughters one day, and the couple were really going at it. Swearing at one another, and my daughter turns to me and says, you know, they're not very happy, are they? I said, no, they're not. And we talked about why they weren't very happy. That registered on her experience. That wasn't on the television. That was next door. You could see more next door than you see on the TV. What's being passed out on the television is false teaching, reinforced maybe 14, 15,000 times. Okay, have you spent that much time with your kid telling them what's right and wrong? So you want to control that. I didn't say eliminate it altogether. I said control it. Maybe the thing to do sometimes is to eliminate altogether. It depends. What you don't want to do is you don't want to have more input coming in from the godless perspective than the other. So during the middle of the week, there's no TV except news in our house. I mean, it's non-existent. On the weekends, they get a half an hour of cartoons in the morning, and they can watch movies that we clear. Okay? Now, do they see some things that we're not particularly fond of? Yes. We try and be in on it with them to be able to interact with it. They're not going to be completely free. You notice that God didn't put us in paradise. Adam and Eve, he did, and Adam and Eve sinned in paradise. There were no bad movies there. Enemy is fairly ingenious about how to get things going in the right direction. Okay, the other thing I want to talk about is the importance of good friends. You want to be monitoring your children's friends. Where you can, you want to help pick them, whether or not they're conscious that you're helping to pick them. They don't have to know. If you gather together with adults your age who are Christian and have children your age who are well-mannered, and you just keep showing up in those situations, sometime the chemistry is going to hit and they'll form good bonds. That means it really helps if you're devoted to fellowship with those other people, doesn't it? When are you going to do that in your schedule? Your schedule is very busy, isn't it? Yes, it's very busy. Notice in church, they're all broken up, sent each other away. It's a different thing to be in a family-family context where the kids have each other without the tube. They have each other with the tube. They can be with one another and not relate to one another. Okay? Comments?
Could you explain a little bit more? I mean, it's not because I disagree with you or anything. I just want to know about spanking children with the rod. I mean, because most of the time, most people spank because they're exasperated.
Yeah.
They've lost control of themselves.
Sure.
And I know that's not what the Lord means.
True. Okay, I'll go for it. In Proverbs chapter 3, tells us not to spurn the discipline of the Lord, because the Lord disciplines those whom he loves as a son, the father of whom delights. So the foundation for the rod is love and delight. Without the foundation, there's no basis to interpret the rod. Okay? So for the rod to be effective, a parent has to spend time, and not just time, but delighting time. One of the most important things your child needs to know is that you delight in them. It's not, you know, you put up with them. It's you see what God has created good, what they can become, and you enjoy that. That is very, very, very important. Okay? Against that background, the rod becomes incredibly merciful. Wait a second. You know how parents said it hurts me worse than it does you. Let's suppose I lied, which I did as a kid. Now I've got this lie on my conscience and I don't want to get it from Dad. So my mind is concocting new stories about how history took place so that I don't end up getting nailed, right? My dad didn't believe a lot of my synthetic history. Say, son, you did this, and it was wrong. This is to help you out. Bam! Wow! I mean, I couldn't sit down afterwards. My dad had a good swing. Okay? But what happened? I no longer had any need for false history. Deceit was gone. And when I came to the point where I said, Dad, I'm sorry, my dad took me back immediately, said, I love you, son. You mean a lot to me. What happened? Fellowship was completely restored. It wasn't go to your room and sit for 3 hours, being out of fellowship all the time. It wasn't you're grounded for a week, which as a kid is eternity, with no resolution of the relationship. Do you see what I mean about the rod being merciful? Has a wonderful way of clearing the air if there's a foundation of love and delight. If there's no foundation of love and delight, what it basically means is they're forcing me. One day, I'm not going to put up with it. One day, I'll have the rod. Yeah, and they can. They can. So in terms of the way it's applied, in a godly way, it runs something like this. Honey, go to my room. While the kids go into my room, I'm sorting things out. I'm dealing with my anger. Okay? Because when I discipline, I want to discipline for their best, not to vent my anger. Okay? So now I get it together with the Lord. I go meet them and explain what they did wrong, not accept any justification, deal out the discipline, and I wait for their change of attitude. Most children's attitude can change fairly quickly. I mean, Dad, I'm sorry. Sometimes it takes longer. Along that line, I discourage parents from hugging their children before the kids have come to grips with what's done wrong. It's like, bang, I've hurt you. Sorry, I hurt you. They don't understand. I mean, you're taking the whole meaning of things away from them. When they understand that repentance leads to a restoration of fellowship, that's something you really want them to be taught. Okay? Does that make sense to you? Now things are over. You forget them. You really do forget them. I don't remember all the things I got spanked for. I knew I got spanked a fair number of times. I have no negative feelings toward my parents at all and what they did. Yes, there just wasn't any.
Supposing your child apologized before this.
Okay, depends. All children apologize when they think it will. I don't do it anymore, Dad. I won't. Please don't hit me. There, it's up for the parent to know his child. And there are clearly children who say that, and when they say it, it's true. Mm-hmm. They are really sorry, and they're not just sentimental sorry. They're not going to do it again. Do you need to spank them then? No. On the other hand...
Their attitudes are...
Right. Now, there are times when they say they're sorry and think they're sorry, but history shows that it hasn't been absorbed yet. Okay? And you have to know that before God. That's where you say, God, what do you think? do they need it now or not? The answer is no, you don't use it. The answer is yes. You say, honey, I know you think you've dealt with this, but I think you need a little more to help you along your way.
And spanking, and if you continually spank and it's repeated action, then you need to go to something besides spanking.
Right. They're getting older. They're about the time that they're going to drive. Okay. Now what do you have them do to gain responsibility? One, you want them to be able to learn how to drive. That's important in our society. It's your car. What are they going to do? Couple of things. One, you want them to get involved with the cost as well as the freedom. It may mean, you know, when you get enough money to purchase insurance, you get to drive. It may mean when you get enough, I'll take half and you take half. But but I want you to understand that it costs, and you'll drive. If you get in an accident, you pay the deductible. Okay, well, their economic ability to pull in is a lot less than yours. Yes, but boy, are they learning. They'd be a lot more careful than individuals who have it given to them. Okay? I don't know how you'll feel about this, but we don't give our kids any allowance. None. Zippo. Zero. And I've thought about it, and I've wrestled with it. But they have the ability to earn money. And when they earn it, it's a lot more carefully spent than if I hand it to them. Something to think about. On the whole, they're all pretty good workers. They don't get that way from being given everything.
My little kids, so I have my kids do not jobs that I say you're part of the family, you have to do
right.
This because you're part of our family, we work together.
Yep.
They have extra jobs that they can do to earn money, and they get an allowance for the extra jobs they do. If they don't do their job and I have to do it because the cat's going to die, she hasn't been fed for 2 days, they pay me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm working for them.
Yeah, right.
And so they can't go out and get jobs, so I feel, Tom and I feel like they really need an allowance
right.
Because they give it.
There, it's not a.
To the church. I mean, they're learning to be responsible with money. We are giving it.
Right. Yeah, I would count that different as an allowance. Allowance is something you just get every week. We have the kids, they do certain chores, they don't get any payment for it. But if they do other things beyond those chores, they say, well, Dad, I want to earn some money. What we got? I say, go down and clean the basement. Do a good job on that. Give you $10. Okay. Oh. Find out it takes a long time because our basement is an absolute disaster. But I do pay them for those kinds of things, but it's not their allowance. They don't get it every week unless they choose to do a job like that every week. You're treating or you're teaching them values. Another comment, very important, struggle for individual time with your teenager. Going to their sporting event, going to their theater event, all those other kinds of things are good and they have their place, but they're not at all on the level of individual time. The best time for communicating values is one-on-one. The question is, how do you do it? You do it in prayer before God. You say, God, I haven't had good, long, alone time with child so-and-so for a number of months. Got any good ideas for me? I do this with my kids. One of the ones I came up with, I hadn't had time with my number two child for a while. I thought, God, they're girls. So they're not into all the stuff that I like to do. They did when they were younger, but now it's no longer in. How do I get time? I had a pastor wife's retreat coming up in Montana. We live in Moscow, Idaho. Mary Lou couldn't go. I thought, I'll take my kid out of school. She'll have 3 or 4 days out, and we'll drive the pastor wife's retreat. She'll stand in for my wife. Of course, my kid thought it was great. Get out of school. He had 6 to 10 hours drive each way. Made time during the retreat for maybe an hour or so a day playing tennis or whatever. Now, nobody else brought their kids. She was the only kid there. Great time. Just good. You've got to think creatively and figure out how to get the time. You just got to fight for it before the Lord. Another thing I do is I date my kids. I take them out for a lunch every now and then. I'll pick them up at school. I tell them I'm doing this because I really enjoy you. And I want you to know that. And I want you to appreciate. I want you to know I really appreciate how well you do in school. And you sit there and let them chat and eat pizza. Okay? Struggle for, seek God before individual time that says, I really like you. I'm glad you're in my household. I've never regretted having you in my home. You don't want to be smothering about it, that you have to be with them every second or they won't grow up. Nor do you want to miss the times that you can get every once in a while. Good one-on-one communication. Long car rides are especially valuable. you see, if you're stuck with one another in a vehicle for 5 or 10 hours, pretty soon you just got to talk. Okay? The idea of quantity versus quality is sometimes made absurd. It takes quantity to get quality. Another helpful thing is get help from your peers. You pick your friends wisely and carefully, and they'll help you raise your children. They'll be good examples. I ask my children, who do you think has the best marriages in our church? Who do you like the best? It's instructive. Every once in a while, one of them will hire one of my kids to do something. Okay, so they're hired to work in their home and watch them. And I know they're good examples. Okay? Thanks, Ryan, my kids. You know, teach them, be hard on them, I don't care. I mean, but I'm thankful they got a chance to see your home. And foster that kind of relationship. Within the topic for the second one was to be children of Christian leaders, we didn't really get to go into. My first camping experience in Michigan, I went to a camp. I'd never been there as a camper. I went as a counselor. I had two children of pastors. They were draped over me for the entire week I was there. I mean, they're hanging on my back, hanging off my legs. I thought, man, what's with these kids? I realized they didn't get very much attention from Dad. They were starved. Thought, put that one away. File that one. I don't want that to happen to my kids. I don't want them to be love starved, so they go to anybody they see and wrap themselves around. I want them to know that I cared for them more than I did my own profession. We've taught our children that if we failed in raising them, we would give up the ministry. Rather than having the ministry be the reason that they were kept from parental love and delight. And we've meant it. There was one situation where Mary Lou and I prayed together and said, if one of our children doesn't improve in 6 months, we're out of the ministry. That's tough praying. But boy, it means you're right there before the Lord. Lord, anything you want me to do, just talk. But I'm willing to give it all up. And they knew that. Big difference. The other thing is fostering that kind of an attitude within a religious organization and a church so that the congregation helps keep their pastors qualified. Because do you know what they're expected to be at? Do you know how many meetings occur in a church in a week? Do you know how many disasters occur in the evenings per week? When does a pastor get to raise his kids? Okay? Now, if you have a congregation that's raised on the right thinking, they're watching how the pastor's kids are doing. And where they see that the pastor's not spending enough time with their kids, they say, go away. You don't need to be at this meeting. Go be with your kids. Or, we'll take care of this item. Go for it. Not only with the pastor, but the other staff. There needs to be a relationship within the deacons and the elders where they look out for one another because they may be able to pick it up faster than you do. You may be able to pick it up for their sake faster than they do. So you say, look, I see you're very gifted. We love having you work here. You're losing one of your kids now. How about dropping out of the deaconate for a few months and just go love your kids, then come back on. Okay. You say, then they step down and there's this stigma of rejection. Not if you foster the right attitude. If you foster the right attitude, you work within the group to keep each other qualified. Does that make sense to you? That takes a while to build, so you get beyond the being judgmental and all that kind of stuff, and you look at the real issue. Any comments or questions?
Usually it seems like in churches, people are so concerned about filling this little hole or this space for service that they don't even stop to think about the effect on the family.
Yes, that needs to change.
Yeah, the priority isn't there, even within the church mindset. It's rare you find someone.
Yeah, and yet, when you look at the qualifications for leadership laid down in the Bible, what do you find? He must lead his family well. He's the model that all the other ones are supposed to follow. Several years back, my wife asked a lady who was working. She said, if God wanted you to, would you quit work and go back home to be with your kids? Could you do that? She said, I don't think I could do that. One, it was unusual for a woman to be that honest. Number two, she said it and she meant that. Her career became first. Her children went by the wayside. She ended up divorced. She's gone. Okay? She never qualified for any leadership in the church. Her priorities weren't right. Unfortunately, a lot of other leaders' priorities are wrong as well.
Did she understand that her priorities were wrong?
Yes.
She just
didn't want to repent. Tough. Okay, I hope you see that raising children is awesome in terms of the sacrifice and commitment. I hope you also see that it's a tremendous thing before the living God. One day you're looking for an adult who's as sharp, maybe sharper than you in the Lord, with whom to fellowship and share. It's a lot different than getting a gold watch after 20 or 30 years of work, to have somebody who's laboring with you side by side in the things that God counts important. Let's close in prayer. Father, thanks for the time together. Father, help me as I continue to raise my children. I want them to love you, walk with you. I thank you that you love them more than I do. I thank you for all the things that you do that I can't do. Help me to do all the things I can. Help all of us. In Christ's name, amen.